Bubbles.
What if the world was so strange we could never hope to understand it? And science was wasting its time trying to do so? It sounds like the sort of thing a mystic might say. But this was a suggestion made 3 decades ago by the most famous scientist in the world, Stephen Hawking.
We were appalled by the idea. Appalled not by Stephen having said it, but the possibility that it might be true.
The implications are about as profound as you can imagine. Predictability goes out the window. Cause and effect, in some sense, become unrelated.
Stephen Hawking in profile.
After 30 years of debate, Stephen Hawking's legacy is being called into question as never before. This is the story of his most controversial theory, and perhaps his greatest mistake.
A flash of light sends pulses like comets streaking across an inky black void. They trace swirling lines around planetary shapes before disappearing into the distance. BBC Horizon. The Hawking Paradox, narrated by Jack Fortune. Marshalled by security personnel, the press and members of the public are gathered outside a large gateway. Approaching security staff part the crowd as Stephen Hawking steers his motorized wheelchair towards the gates. Photographers snap away eagerly.
He is one of the most famous people on the planet. Perhaps the only true celebrity scientist. Stephen Hawking's diary reads like that of a global personality, with appearances across the world, including Spain, where he recently launched a new edition of his best-selling book, A Brief History of Time.
Hawking's automated voice.
It is not really any shorter. And I hope it is easier to understand.
He's become a byword for genius.
He's absolutely unique. And I think he has been a very important person in both the intellectual and the cultural life of the past century.
Stephen has inspired more people than any physicist in recent times. And therefore, his impact on the public has been as great as any physicist, probably since Einstein.
Professor Lawrence Krauss, Case Western Reserve University. Stephen Hawking's led down a narrow corridor.
But recently, doubts have been expressed by some physicists about Hawking's scientific reputation.
Hawking enters a conference to warm applause.
A debate has begun about exactly what legacy Stephen Hawking will leave behind.
There's a tremendous gulf between the public perception of the importance of Hawking and the scientific evaluation of his contribution. There are many, many theoretical physicists who've made a big impact on physics and a greater impact than Hawking has.
Professor Peter Coles, University of Nottingham.
The doubts about Hawking have recently crystallized around an idea he proposed over 30 years ago. He called it the information paradox.
Hawking's in his wheelchair in a brightly lit room.
It's an idea which has provoked one of the great intellectual battles of recent times between the most famous scientist in the world and those determined to prove him wrong. It's a battle which ranges from the birth of the universe to deep inside the atom. And its roots are in Hawking's earliest work.
A black and white photo of children playing.
I have always been interested in how things work. I used to take things apart to see what made them tick, but I wasn't so good at putting them back together again. Understanding means that, in a sense, you are in control. From the age of 14, I knew I wanted to do physics, because it was the most fundamental of the sciences.
Professor Stephen Hawking.
Stephen Hawking was born on the 8th of January, 1942.
I was born 300 years to the day after the death of Galileo. Like Galileo, I have wanted to work out my own understanding of the universe.
For some time, nothing seemed to mark Hawking out as extraordinary. But then he arrived at Cambridge University as a young postgraduate student.
Cambridge in the 60s, which was when I began my research, was a very exciting place to work. We felt everything was possible, and much of it was.
From a photo of Hawking's student days to an almighty galactic explosion.
Hawking made his name almost immediately when he worked on a new theory, the Big Bang. He showed how the vast universe around us had begun as an infinitely small point of infinite gravity and infinite density. It established him as a great scientist. But there remained many mysteries about the Big Bang. So Hawking now turned his attention to something he hoped would shed light on them. The black hole.
A cloudy nebula against the darkness of space.
A black hole begins with a momentous event. The death of a star.
An enormous fiery star.
As a massive star dies, it collapses in on itself.
Fierce gas eruptions on the star's surface, then a violent blast.
Where the star had been, gravity now becomes infinitely powerful, and anything which approaches it is sucked in, even light.
Professor Kip Thorne.
Light can't get out, no radiation can get out. It will look like an absolutely pitch black sphere in space. And so it will really, truly look like a black hole.
Light spiraling into a black hole.
At the invisible heart of the black hole is a mysterious place where the fabric of time and space are transformed, and the equations of physics break down.
If you followed the equations to their inevitable conclusion, the matter would collapse to form a single point.
This single point is infinitely small and infinitely dense. The center of a black hole bears a startling resemblance to the beginning of the Big Bang.
A blurry, pulsating globule.
Which is why Hawking was convinced black holes would help him reach a deeper understanding about the nature of the universe. They would, but they would also, in time, lead inexorably to his most controversial idea.
Professor Stephen Hawking, Cambridge University.
Black holes are places where space and time come to an end, and matter is crushed out of existence. If we could understand how time comes to an end in black holes, it might help us understand how time began in the Big Bang.
From matter disappearing into a point, to black and pink tulips.
The attempt to understand black holes drew in physicists from all over the world, including someone who would become one of Hawking's closest friends, Kip Thorne.
The period from about 1965 to about 1980 was what I like to call the golden age of research on the theory of black holes. Enormous progress was made. And Stephen was the dominant figure in that progress.
As well as Hawking's scientific triumphs, he was also to witness firsthand the decline in his health.
Photos of a younger Hawking.
At the age of 22, Hawking was diagnosed with ALS, a type of motor neurone disease. His doctors gave him 2 years to live. It was a prediction Hawking chose to ignore.
Stephen's ALS has progressed much more slowly than with almost anybody else. We don't know for sure why, but it has been much more slow.
Hawking traveling in his wheelchair.
By the 1970s, Hawking had lost the power of his limbs, and his speech was slurred. All this might have destroyed his career. Instead, astonishingly, he turned it to his advantage.
Footage of Hawking in a class.
So Stephen will basically be talking about infinity.
He had to develop a whole new way, different from the rest of us, for working with the mathematics of Einstein's relativity. He learned to do it entirely in his brain without the benefit of writing things down.
Now, it just so happens that we have the universe here.
Hawking's assistant places a tube on a table. He turns it the right way up. Kip Thorne.
He developed a way of doing it that involved manipulating images of the shapes of objects.
Light shimmering over one of Hawking's eyes.
The shapes of curves, the shapes of surfaces, not in three-dimensional space, but in four-dimensional space plus time.
It's a kind of intuition he has about spatial relationships. He has the ability to visualize things that's very uncommon, and that's one of the things that makes him so effective at what he does.
It has made him unique among all physicists in his ability to do a wide range of calculations, far better than he would ever have been able to do if he had not had ALS.
This unique way that Hawking was forced to work and think about the world would now allow him to understand the black hole better than anyone else.
Stars, nebulae, and galaxies swirling into a black hole which grows steadily.
Before Hawking began to tackle the black hole, it had been shrouded in mystery. But over a decade and a half, he developed a series of laws and equations which began to explore some of its many secrets. He described the swirling edge of the black hole, the event horizon, where gravity became an irresistible force. He described how time slowed and eventually stopped around a black hole, and how, once matter crossed the event horizon, it could never return. But Hawking wanted more. He wanted a complete mathematical description of a black hole. It was an extraordinarily difficult task. Bernard Carr was Hawking's research student during this time.
Stephen is always wrapped up in the problems he's working on. He thinks very deeply about things, and inevitably one is wrapped up. But at this time, I think he was particularly wrapped up in this because it was such an important problem.
Professor Bernard Carr, University of London.
The conditions in and around a black hole were so varied and extreme, they called on many different types of physics, some of which were incompatible and had never been brought together before. It was now that Hawking's new way of working came into its own.
A black hole as an indented plane.
He imagined a series of elaborate interactions between a black hole and the different forces of nature. From gravity to those which govern the quantum world of subatomic particles. The equations which governed all these different interactions were long and complex. But in one of the great insights of modern physics, he managed now to boil them all down into one single equation.
I remember he was very puzzled. I remember talking to him over tea, and he was saying he was doing calculations and getting this strange result.
In just one elegant equation were symbols which represented all the major branches of physics which might affect a black hole. There was G for gravity, C from the work of Einstein and his E equals mc squared, H from the baffling world of quantum physics, and S from thermodynamics. From particle physics to Newton, everything Hawking knew about a black hole was now brought together in a small but audacious piece of mathematical brilliance.
Sometimes in physics you get a result which is so beautiful it sort of almost has to be correct, and this result was beautiful.
It's a classic. The logic that goes into deriving it is very complicated, but it's a beautifully simple formula.
He was able, just by visualizing the process in his mind, to get to the right answer. It's a marvelous thing.
It was a triumph, and it confirmed Hawking's reputation as a genius.
Results like that are so elegant, they must be right. It shows there is a deep underlying unity in nature.
The equation fragmented in a space-time continuum, and Hawking's thoughtful eyes.
But it soon became clear that this enigmatic equation had a powerful dark side too. Hawking discovered that at its heart was a paradox which could undermine the whole of physics. And this claim would lead him to confront his colleagues in a battle that would last 30 years.
Speeded up footage of a sunset and traffic, then a flag moving in reverse and a bearded man clinging to a one-way sign.
The man who had come to understand the disturbing implications of Hawking's work and become his chief opponent was Leonard Susskind.
My relationship with Stephen Hawking has been what you would call adversarial. But we are friends. There's no question we're friends. It's an intellectually adversarial relationship. Two people who believe two different things, arguing as strenuously as we can for our own position, but with a great deal of respect for each other.
Leonard Susskind.
Until 1980, Susskind had spent most of his time working in an unrelated area of physics from that of Hawking. And he might never have come across the information paradox if it wasn't for an unlikely meeting.
The first time we met was in San Francisco, in a mansion owned by a gentleman by the name of Werner Erhard.
Werner Erhard started his career as a car salesman, but he wasn't content with cars.
He had a thing for physics. He loved physics, and he loved physicists. We convinced him to hold some small conferences up in his mansion. We wanted to draw together a group of people who are interested in common problems, problems of the very, very front lines of theoretical physics, and we thought there would be no place greater than in Werner's mansion.
It was during one of those conferences that Susskind first met Stephen Hawking, a meeting which was to change the course of his career. Hawking had been asked to give a presentation about his latest work on black holes, and it soon became clear that his new theory was astonishing, for Hawking said he could prove that bits of the universe were disappearing. This was a bombshell.
This was something that violated all of the principles of physics, everything that we knew about physics up to that point. We stood at the blackboard in this electric moment of stunning confusion.
Hawking in a dimly lit office.
Leonard Susskind got very upset. I think he was the only one in the room who fully appreciated the implications of what I had said.
Hawking's arguments were related to his brilliant equation, and in particular, the symbol S, from the study of thermodynamics. Until Hawking, it had been assumed that black holes were dark, cold places that lasted forever. But S suggested, in effect, that the black hole was radiating heat and burning up. That had important consequences.
What happens if you follow that to its logical conclusion is the black hole will radiate all of its mass away and go poof.
Hawking was saying that a black hole would eventually disappear, and it was this that caused the problem. Throughout its life, a black hole would suck in anything that came near it, from astronauts to light. But when the black hole was gone, what happened to all that stuff? Hawking claimed it just disappeared too. But scientists hated this idea, for it wasn't just inconvenient. It was scientific heresy, because it went against one of the fundamental principles of physics.
Gridded spheres appear, then disappear in space.
According to physicists, everything in the universe is made up of particles. It's long been one of their most deeply held beliefs that the information encoded in these particles can never be lost.
Information never disappears. It can be scrambled. You can get, chopped up like chopped liver or whatever. But it was a very, very basic principle of physics that information is never destroyed.
High-rise buildings being demolished.
According to the strange laws of quantum physics, whatever you do to an object, you can always retrieve the information in the particles that make it up. This means, in theory, that if you collect all the information about an object, you could reconstruct it, almost magically, from scratch.
The building's reassembling.
And it was this fundamental principle that Hawking was now challenging.
Once you admit that this kind of thing can happen, once you admit that information can be lost, you can't quarantine it and say it only happens in black holes. You're going to find it happening in all kinds of contexts, and it will have the most incredibly dramatic effects in the ordinary world.
Professor Leonard Susskind, Stanford University. Clouds of dust and smoke billowing up from the demolition.
If the information paradox was right, then, effectively, bits of the universe were missing.
Lawrence Krauss.
The implications are about as profound as you can imagine. Because what it really means is that predictability goes out the window. Cause and effect become decoupled.
And that means nothing science knows, not even our memories, could be trusted.
The universe would be completely chaotic. At its most extreme scale, what it means is everything you come to know and love would ultimately disappear. Because anything you know and love involves information, in a sense. Those things go away. There's nothing that remains sensible and is preserved over time.
Scientists usually assume there is a unique correspondence between the past and the future, cause and effect. But if information is lost, this is not the case. One wouldn't be able to predict the future with certainty. And one couldn't be sure what happened in the past.
Tarot cards, a graffitied wall, then traffic lights at night.
This was an idea that struck at the very nature of reality.
A pedestrian walk light changes to don't walk.
But as Susskind listened, Hawking insisted it was true. And what's more, his mathematics seemed watertight.
Stephen had this Stephen look on his face, the little smile which says, "You may not believe it, but I'm right, and make no mistake about it." We were absolutely sure that Stephen was wrong, but we couldn't see why.
Shaky speeded up footage traveling through a city at night. Leonard Susskind.
I had a 40-minute drive back to Palo Alto, and I couldn't concentrate on the way back. Every time the traffic slowed down, all I could think about was drawing this picture of the black hole on my windshield. I would draw the picture and stare at it. In the midst of all of this traffic, I was probably a menace on the way home, and I couldn't stop thinking about it. I was just completely trapped and obsessed with this question that Stephen had asked.
Stephen Hawking crossing a Cambridge University campus in his wheelchair.
It now seemed as if Hawking's great equation threatened science and its ability to understand the world. He named this problem the information paradox. It scandalized and perplexed scientists in equal measure. But Hawking stuck to his guns and challenged the physicists who scorned him to prove it wrong.
I would describe Stephen as being the most stubborn individual in the entire universe.
Somewhere deep down inside himself, I'm sure there are questions and uncertainties, but they don't show on the outside at all, even to his closest friends. He is dogged about pushing his view of how nature is, and he thereby challenges all of his colleagues to prove him wrong.
Now, my first guest tonight is a truly remarkable man, regarded by many as a genius, arguably the greatest theoretical physicist since Einstein.
If the information paradox had been put forward by any other scientist, perhaps it would have been easier to dismiss. But its announcement coincided with an extraordinary change in Hawking's status.
Now, the nature of the universe is an unlikely subject for a bestseller.
From someone known mainly in academic circles, he became a global celebrity, best-selling author.
Has sold about 8 million copies now.
The most famous physicist and the face of science itself. The man who said science should read the mind of God.
When he speaks with this curious electronic voice, it's almost like some kind of oracle pronouncing on it. And that kind of also puts him in that kind of curiously mystical role. And I really think a great many people see him as that kind of strange, incomprehensible figure who can communicate with the universe.
As his status grew, Hawking continued to maintain the information paradox was true, which was worrying, because the threat from black holes was growing too.
From Hawking on a TV chat show to stars in a cloudy nebula.
It wasn't until 1972 that astronomers were actually able to see a black hole. Had there been only one, then perhaps physics could have found a way around the information paradox. It could have become a unique exception. But there wasn't just one black hole. Soon, astronomers had found thousands. Then, there were millions.
Within our universe, there are at least 100,000 million black holes.
And they weren't all the same, either. Astronomers found an enormous, supermassive black hole at the center of our galaxy. Then it was even suggested that we could be surrounded by tiny subatomic black holes.
And they could be all through the universe, including in this room or indeed in my head, and we wouldn't know anything about them.
If the information paradox was true, then all of these black holes were machines eating up information. And so across the world, physicists were increasingly keen to solve it.
An image of a black hole.
No one more so than Leonard Susskind.
Three Leonard Susskinds are adopting different poses whilst reading books in a sitting room.
For over a decade, Susskind studied all the literature on black holes, looking for a way round Hawking's reasoning. In time, it would lead him to a remarkable idea, which was all about images and projections.
Film is loaded into a projector and played.
His breakthrough came when he looked back at early work done by Hawking and others in the 1970s. This concerned an inexplicable contradiction that seemed to occur at the edge of the black hole, the event horizon.
Matter swirling around an event horizon.
The theory stated that if an observer watched someone falling in towards the event horizon, they would see something extraordinary happening to that person.
As that person gets closer and closer to the black hole, they will be evaporated, ionized. All the terrible things that would happen from extremely high temperatures would happen to them, and eventually would just be converted to electrons, protons, neutrons, just completely destroyed.
Leonard Susskind. A black hole on a complex gridded plane.
But the very same equation said that the person falling in would themselves experience something rather different.
The really bizarre thing is that the same laws of nature tell you that from the perspective of somebody falling into the black hole, they would see nothing special at the horizon. They would just freely fall through it, no hot temperatures, no destructive influences, and would cleanly pass through the horizon with absolutely nothing interesting happening.
The same equations were saying that someone could both be dead and alive. Even for physics, this was a pretty bizarre contradiction. And at first, there seemed no way around it.
A film projector.
Susskind's inspired move was to find a way to explain how both could be equally correct.
While it seems extremely weird that both of these stories could be true, as far as we can tell now, both stories are true.
What Susskind said is that as the person went into the black hole, the information contained in their body was smeared on the event horizon, so they'd appear to outsiders to disintegrate. But the person themselves would still think they were intact. He said it was almost as if the black hole was acting like a giant cosmic projector, taking a three-dimensional person and turning them into a two-dimensional surface on its edge.
If you looked in incredible detail, far more detail than we can really imagine, at everything taking place on the surface of the black hole, we could reconstruct everything taking place inside.
In effect, the information remains stretched on the edge of the black hole. And that means information is not destroyed. It's all, theoretically, able to be retrieved. The information paradox, according to Susskind, was solved.
A film projection of a woman roller skating.
Now, across the world, physicists raced to confirm it.
Complex equations scrawled across a blackboard.
Finally, after 10 years and hundreds of attempts, a paper emerged which vindicated Susskind. It was a rigorous mathematical proof and seemed to clinch the debate. Information was not lost in black holes.
This was enough to pretty much convince most of the community of physicists that information could never be lost from a black hole.
The tide was turning against Hawking. The growing consensus was that he just had to be wrong. Cause and effect were related after all. Our memories were safe.
Set back amongst trees is a house with a doorway leading onto a patio.
But one man begged to differ.
Inside the house, Stephen Hawking sits in his wheelchair at a table, reading with his wife.
Shall I turn the page?
She tries to alter his head position, and he winces.
Well, sweetheart, your head is falling forward. Come on. Just say no to me.
By the year 2000, Hawking had defied a series of doctors' dire predictions.
Do you want me to scan down?
But his health had nonetheless declined, and he was forced to spend increasing amounts of time at home.
His wife moves a computer mouse.
It's only 40%. Looks bad. You know where we are? Will it go out? No, not, darling. It's not kicking in.
To stay alive, he relied on a staff of nurses and his wife, Elaine.
You're going to have some of this. And you've got one of these left.
Hawking watches as Elaine picks up a small spoon and starts feeding him.
He was inevitably less active in the everyday world of the physics community. And for a new generation of physicists, he was no longer the giant he once seemed. When the journal Physics World held a poll on the eve of the millennium, asking who was the most influential physicist, Stephen Hawking came last out of 20. With one vote.
I've done this with quite a lot of my colleagues in physics. Said, well, you know, if you were to draw up your top 10 list of physicists of the 20th century, say, I've yet to find one who would put Hawking in there. But they do mention people who are not known in the public at all, people like Dirac, Feynman, Weinberg, Ed Witten, who actually is not known outside of the field of physics, but it's probably had a bigger impact on science than Hawking has.
Hawking, Elaine and a nurse proceed along a corridor.
What few people realised was that Stephen Hawking was planning a comeback. He was determined to show that he had been right all along about the information paradox.
The nurse sets him up in his office.
Even though the challenge was now greater than ever before.
Kip Thorne.
In recent years, Stephen has gradually become more slow in controlling his computer by clicking a clicker in his hand. And that has begun to impede his communication with his colleagues.
It was no longer possible for Hawking to work alone. So to help him, he called on a young research student, Christoph Galfar.
I guess it's a dream for many people to work with such an icon in science. But working with Stephen doesn't mean working with equations. It means working with words and with concepts. And that's how he leads my research.
Hawking would direct Christoph, suggesting new ways to attack the problem. Christoph would then work on the detailed mathematics to see if Hawking's insights panned out.
For the first year and a half, every sentence of Stephen's took me about 6 months to understand. I was 6 months behind what he was telling me and catching up little bit by little bit. It was hard.
In profile, Hawking blinks slowly, deep in thought.
After reviewing all the recent material on the information paradox, Hawking decided to tackle directly the paper which had convinced people Susskind was right and he was wrong.
Juan Maldacena's paper on black holes.
Stephen asked me to have a look at that paper. So I took a little while to read it, a little while being about a year and a half. It took me a while to understand it.
It was an arduous task. A 22-year-old student, guided by the aging Hawking, was trying to overturn a paper that was at the very forefront of modern physics. Few people thought he would succeed, and most especially, Leonard Susskind.
He was quite certain it was wrong, and he set out to prove it. In fact, we met at one occasion, and he gave forth with all of his ideas about what was wrong with it. I was certain, absolutely certain, and I told him so, that he was not going to disprove it, that it was correct.
For 18 months, Christoph patiently tried to decipher the thoughts of his professor.
Yes.
But in spite of all this work, Hawking and his student were getting nowhere.
It was still very, very hard to have a definite answer to whether the information was lost or not.
And then disaster struck.
Lights passing overhead.
On December the 1st, 2003, Hawking was rushed to hospital. For days, doctors had been increasingly concerned about a dramatic decline in Hawking's health. Now they feared for his life. He was taken immediately to the intensive care unit and placed on a life support machine. Hawking was diagnosed with pneumonia. For weeks, his condition was critical.
We didn't know whether we would see him again. We were very, very concerned.
Christoph Galfar.
Hawking's body was now seriously weakened. But his mind was elsewhere.
Hawking staring into the distance, then faraway galaxies in an inky void.
Throughout his career, Hawking had wrestled with the infinite. The vastness of the universe, the beginning of time itself. But now, on what appeared to be his deathbed, he returned to his favorite theme, the black hole. For Hawking, this ultimate destructive force of nature was familiar territory. He had circled its horizon and plumbed its depths. But this time, as he contemplated it, he felt he could see something new. For the first time in 30 years, he could see a fresh way to consider the black hole's greatest puzzle, the information paradox. A new idea which, if true, would confirm himself as the world's foremost expert on black holes.
A nurse pushes Hawking's mechanized wheelchair out of a house.
Once again, Hawking defied his doctor's predictions. And within 3 months, he was discharged from hospital.
Elaine and the nurse strap him safely into a car.
That's it.
And working on his new idea.
Christoph Galfar.
Soon after Stephen came back from hospital, he asked me to work with double speed. We spent hours and hours writing at night, late night, weekend, day, night, all the time.
Then Hawking made a dramatic announcement. He wanted to address the scientific community at one of the most prestigious conferences in physics.
Shortly before the meeting, we got word from Hawking that he wanted to speak. Sure, when somebody of Stephen's stature asked to speak, you try to accommodate him.
Gary Horowitz.
Hawking's paper was a late entry. The schedule was cleared, and he was found a slot. The conference got underway, but what everyone was waiting for was Hawking's new idea. Many in the audience were expecting another defiant performance, a proof that Hawking was right, and that information was lost in a black hole. But Hawking had a surprise. He wasn't here to defend the information paradox. He was here to bury it.
Can you hear me? I want to report that I think I have solved a major problem in theoretical physics that has been around since 30 years ago.
Hawking's speech turned out to be one of the great U-turns of science. For information, he now admitted, was not lost in black holes after all. The idea he defended for 30 years had been wrong all along. But after the shock, there was a twist in the tale. Hawking claimed Susskind wasn't right either. And instead, he now had his own solution, one which was to leave his audience largely bemused.
Mirror-imaged universes.
It was based on the familiar theory that the universe we live in might be only one of an infinite number of universes, each with its own different history. In some, a black hole would exist. In other universes, it would not. To understand the real effect of a black hole, you had to combine all of the parallel universes together.
One therefore has to sum over alternative histories, with and without, a black hole. Information is lost in the black hole histories, but information is preserved in histories without a black hole.
In effect, those universes where black holes existed would be cancelled out by those where they didn't. And that meant information didn't disappear, because there would be no black hole for it to become trapped in the first place.
If one waits long enough, only the histories without a black hole will be significant. So in the end, information is preserved.
If there is no black hole, then there is no problem, basically.
The man who'd spent most of his career trying to understand black holes had now come up with a proof that made them disappear. And in the process, effectively admitted that for 30 years, he'd been wrong.
Leonard Susskind.
My reaction to Stephen's announcement was mild amusement and to say to myself, it's about time.
Hawking leaving the conference.
The response from the conference itself was muted. His paper struck many as big on claims, but short on maths.
He claimed to have solved this paradox, and it was all over the newspapers and television. But actually, physicists were not really that impressed. It hadn't been subjected to scrutiny. It was just an announcement. Then it turned out to be not really all that convincing.
Professor Peter Coles. Stephen Hawking's home at dusk. Inside, Christoph Galfar is working with him.
Let's see. F, an infinite.
So will this latest idea of Hawking's turn out to be a fitting coda for a lifetime of achievement? That will depend on the work he is doing right now.
Well, defined.
Galfar sits beside Hawking with the keyboard.
He is trying to flesh out his idea with a mathematical proof. If it is to convince his critics, it will have to be just as brilliant as his best work.
Was it defined? No.
Progress is tortuously slow.
Described.
Hawking now finds it hard to spell out words. And so Christoph tries to anticipate his professor's thoughts.
Do you want an S?
Hawking guides him with small movements of his face.
Do you want an S? Sorry. No. A D? A T? An F? Formulated?
I don't know the details of his proposal, and so I can't really comment on how successful it will be. I can't say at the moment whether Stephen's new ideas will materialize into anything interesting.
Stephen posed this incredible problem. And what could be better after having done that than to bring it full circle and solve the very problem you posed?
Professor Lawrence Krauss. Stephen Hawking.
I have no intention of stopping anytime soon. I want to understand the universe and answer the big questions. That is what keeps me going.